This is a podcast from the University of Manchester's Jodl Bank Centre for Astrophysics. For more information, see jodcast.net.
Okay, I'm here today at Jodl Bank Observatory, and I'm honoured to have with me a stand-up comedian.
Yes.
Who is also a TV presenter.
Yes.
A celebrity tweeter.
Yeah.
But above all else, he's Irish, and he's an amateur astronomer. Very welcome, Darragh O'Brien.
It's a pleasure to be here, actually, yes. Yeah, although my amateur astronomy is probably not as strong as, you know, I did physics, and I did, but I did theoretical physics. I did mathematics and mathematical physics. So actually, I haven't looked into an eyepiece anywhere near as much as, you know, I've been letting on. You know, I'm about dusty rooms and chalkboards. Like, we're, you know, we were in Brian's dressing room working at the Taylor series expansion to derive E equals MC squared. That's my world, my lads. It's actually this stuff where you measure things, actually look at real things. I never did that nonsense. That's ludicrous.
That's still pretty hardcore. I'm pretty impressed.
It was hardcore in itself, like whatever. And I wasn't the integration master or anything. I was all right at it, but actually, I'm as much math as I am physics, to be honest. Whatever. Although obviously, yeah, we all know this. Yeah, I can talk sheep farmer and cattle farmer distinctions with you guys because you know what I mean. To the public, that just means they all mean the same thing. So,
well. That brings me on to my first question, actually. So you have a degree in physics, mathematical physics.
Yes. Yeah.
Can you tell me what originally interested you in doing science?
Oh, listen, being told about as a 14-year-old about relativity, and then reading, you know, Schrodinger's cat and those kind of popularizations that catch you when you're at your most impressionable, and then I just, you know, that was a passion that led almost all the way through the degree, where suddenly it became all about learning different forms of Fourier transform and different forms of constitutive equations, and there was very little factual physics in a maths physics degree, and it kind of beat it out of me a little bit for a while. But it was just, you know, that childhood passion for rubber sheet geometry.
Okay. So at some stage then during your physics degree, you thought it would be more prudent to take up a more secure
to
career.
To run away to the circus.
Yes.
I was in university. I was a kind of an inter-varsity debater. I did, I spoke it in I won an Irish national title in your old university, in the Siobhan McKenna, isn't that the big theatre in Galway? I won the Irish Times there, and got involved in that. And that is basically your jumping into it. That is standing in front of crowds, telling jokes. And then I ended up being the guy in UCD, which is Ireland's largest university, who would host the fresher orientation meetings,
right,
and that kind of stuff. I was the go-to guy for public talking in university. And then, just weirdly, somebody asked me to try, because I was your funny debater. So somebody said, would you try doing a stand-up? Never really thinking that I would end up doing it like I have. I'm still waiting to be found out to a certain extent, and for somebody to call me back to the small provincial college where I'm teaching differentiation to first year engineering students.
Well, you're getting away with it quite well, I think.
Yes, I am. I am continuing to get away with it, but still that call might come, and I will have to, you know, and I look forward to going DYDX to learn to people who don't see why they have to learn it, and me going, oh,
So you started off as a scientist,
yeah,
and you decided to become a stand-up comedian, but you obviously remained still curious and interested in science.
I did. I would say there was a few years where I kind of a post-degree where I went, oh God, that was so unbelievably tough that I needed a break from it. And what happened was it re-emerged, my innate nerdiness re-emerged as I got a little bit older, and I got back in touch with it. It also re-emerged because I found myself doing a lot of kind of what we call bad science, debunking type routines, and I found myself getting very involved with that. Like every show I've done for the last while, it started with Gillian McKeith. It can all be tracked back to Gillian McKeith,
yes, okay,
and You Are What You Eat, and a show called, Honey, We're Killing the Kids.
That okay.
It. And it had this ludicrous thing where they would show people a computer simulation, which they would say, this is an accurate prediction. You're going to have, you know, it's an accurate prediction of what the child would look like at 40. By definition, you can't say it's an accurate prediction, because it's a prediction.
Yeah.
It would show a computer simulation, and then it would try to scare parents by going this, and your child would look junky, basically.
Right.
It was like, your child would look like a fat heroin junkie, if there's such a thing. And that just got me. Do you know the male child would be shown bald, and that just infuriated me, because the parents, neither of whom were bald,
right,
would never question how are we changing our child's innate DNA. Are we making, giving our child male pattern baldness by feeding him pizza? And that kind of stuff just reawakened and angering me about this kind of stuff. And it evolved to the point where I'm doing routines about neutrinos, for Christ's sake, and bad science involving subatomic particles, and trying to get that past mainstream audiences. So it was my return to science was tempered not just by wonder, but by anger.
Okay, so you returned to science in an effort to defend it. And
essentially, yeah. And there is a zeitgeisty move towards, you know, these kind of the godless shows, as we call them, which are these kind of shows where comedians share a bill with Dawkins and and Cox and Ben Goldacre and Brian and Simon Singh and these people. And we do our sceptical material and they do their actual science.
Okay.
And there is also, I think, a general movement among a large chunk of the population, you see basically all of Twitter, away from the kind of just the frothy nonsense that we've been fed for the last one into, you know, hey, let's hear what smart people have to say. And I am one of those sitting on the side. I happily listen to the smart people.
Hear, hear.
Yes, yeah, yeah. No, it's great. People have actually studied something. It's kind of refreshing to people who know something about something.
Yes. So now we're here at Jodrell Bank Observatory.
Yes.
And you're here for BBC Stargazing Live.
Yes.
And I'm just wondering how active of an amateur astronomer you have been and how much you will be after having done this.
Well, I will be more so. I have a telescope at home. I have one of those kind of fantastic ones. You press a button and it brings you on a tour. Where we're living at the moment isn't exact. We moved house and it got packed up in a box because it's not ideal. I'm either north or south facing, so I don't get it particularly clear, as in like things arrive over the house eventually, and so it's not ideal where I am at the moment. Like, so I got to start packing stuff in the boot of the car, like whatever. But I can see myself doing a lot more simply from the experience of having this. It's been fantastically interesting. Yes, I'm quite a go out and have a look at the Perseid meteor shower type thing. I'm very pro that. That's a bit of a personal favourite of mine.
Well, I think you and Brian Cox are doing a great job in that. In that, I think you'll have encouraged people who maybe don't have a telescope that they can go out and do naked eye astronomy.
Well, apparently, naked eye is obviously, if we point out the things that are available naked eye, that's great. We also found that telescopes were trending on Amazon after the first show, like immediately after the first show.
Excellent.
People turned to their computers and went, how much is a telescope? So they suddenly became this thing on Amazon. So hopefully, and the viewing figures have been astonishingly good for this. I mean, we would have been happy with about 2 million. It would have been okay in that slot, and it would have been a good solid number, because you'd presume, well, that's a pretty good 3.6 for the first show and 3.2 for the second is phenomenally good. So it's gone great. Yeah.
That is excellent. And now we've heard there's a rumour going around.
Yes.
That you're hosting Stargazing Live as a result of losing a bet.
Ah, that was just, I said that. No, I'm hosting Stargazing Live.
That was incorrect.
That's incorrect. I am, however, hosting Stargazing Live due to being sold a pup, as we say. I was initially told we want to do a show where we would bring you to Africa and you sit on top of a mountain outside Cape Town and you look at the stars. And I went, yeah, I'll do that. It's January. I'd love to have a week in Africa in January. Brilliant. And then I received an email from the BBC going, great news. The shoot is now in Macclesfield. And their chirpy, upbeat tone. And I was on board at that stage. It was too late for me to turn around and go, it was false advertising, basically. I got lured into doing one show, and I got nothing against Macclesfield. My in-laws live in Macclesfield, and my wife rang me and said, Jesus, every night you say, here we are in Macclesfield. Like, it's the worst place in the world to be. Hey, Macclesfield is fine, it's grand. In fact, I'm technically not even in strictly in Macclesfield. But, you know, it's not Africa. I was expecting to finish this tonight, right? And then tomorrow to drive down to the coast. And maybe to go to the Stellenbosch region and have some wine, or maybe go on a safari. That's what I was planning to do. I wasn't planning to go to essentially the Linton Travel Tavern Hotel that we're staying in at the moment, and have a few pints and then get the train back home. So nothing against what we're doing here, and I love what you're doing, and wow, it's great to be in Jodrell Bank, but Christ, like every night you should see behind my eyes a small amount of regret that I don't get to hit the beach at any stage during this shoot. Sorry. And you know, they promised me a beach.
So,
pull it together, bad interview technique. Now, pull it together. You're only reading the things off the sheet, for Christ's sake. You know what I mean? Like, Yeah.
This is my first interview, Dara. I've never interviewed anyone in my entire life.
Yeah. It is just a form of conversation, so you can't stop. You can't stop in a conversation.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, next thing I was going to ask you is, well, how... You were sold, we'll say, a different vision of this event.
Yes, yes.
But now you're here at the wonderful Jodrell Bank.
At glorious Jodrell Bank,
the home of astronomy in the UK.
I turned to stare at the window, and this is probably the only one that doesn't look at the scope. It's over there. No. Yeah, it is. It's fantastic. But it's also that proper people do working and people do science here. And there's bits like, you know, just bits of tat lying around and old scientific papers stacked in corners, like, and it brings back memories of.
This is how it's done.
Yes, it is. Yeah, and look, it'd be of lecturers, things, and you go to a lecturer's room to ask them questions about something, and they would have piles. There was a guy called Thomas Laffey, who was a lecturer in mathematics, and his room was just this forest, and he looked like one of those hoarding men whose corpses they find when you know nobody's heard from them for 2 weeks and they kick down the door, like, whatever. Because at some stage, proceedings of the Mathematical Society or whatever would have collapsed on him, and he would have been trapped and not be able to. He would have written "help" in chalk on the blackboard in his room, like, whatever, before collapsing. But it is a bit like that. There's like old circuit board and transport. There's also a bell. Why is there a bell?
Ah, the bell here is traditionally to summon people to lectures or colloquia. If there was a guest speaker, everyone would be so engrossed in their research that they'd need some kind of alarming noise to get them to go to.
But that's it, because Cox led on that it was a safety thing, that they're about to move the telescope, and here's the bell. Like, yeah, I remember thinking, that can't hold true, because the bell is like ding ding. It's like, who would go, oh wow, ding ding, because it's not even near the telescope.
No.
He's such a bluffer.
There is actually a sound that rings before the telescope.
Yeah, because I'm sure there's like a horn of some description. Yeah, more than ding ding, like, everybody, yeah, dinner's ready. Ding ding. Okay, grand. So I want to ring the bell when we finish the last show.
You're going to ring it tonight?
Yes, I want to ring it tonight.
To close the show? On live TV?
No, I won't bother on live TV. It's not a thing. But I will do it myself. Because I walked past it and I felt I shouldn't ring it because I thought it might signify. But will everyone run out and expect me to deliver a symposium on?
I don't think so. I think it can be used in a celebratory way as well.
Yes.
We hereby confer the power to ring the bell tonight.
Thank you very much. You're very kind.
So, you're here in beautiful Jodrell Bank.
Yeah.
And you're working with some great co-presenters. I was wondering how you were getting on working with them, Professor Brian Cox.
Well, Cox is fantastic. Cox, you just have to occasionally rein him in because he will go proto-nerd on stuff. He will go, I've interviewed conversations with Brian about relativity that involve him talking very fluently and me scratching furiously through 20 years of accumulated dust to find to keep up with him. Like, is there a null GD6? And I'm going, Jesus, null GD6 with GIJ. Always the shape of null GD6. And so it is, you know, and I'm nodding furiously and then I'm to think of a smart question, think of a smart thing to say. So, but there is, you know, I think I fit quite naturally into the, I know a little bit about this, so I can ask questions, but I am on the side of the viewers. I'm on the side of the 10-year-old boy who reads a bit about this, but needs to know a little bit more. So, we're also philosophically, we're in tune in terms of we don't want it to be dumbed down.
Yes.
And I think a large part of it hasn't been dumbed down.
I think that's correct. And I think you're more than well representing the well-informed, interested amateur.
Yes. Yeah. That might be a good way to. Yeah.
So you're also working with Jonathan Ross.
Ross will be in later on today. We are confining him because otherwise he will run rampage through the show because he's that is his persona. You may make a joke about his current appearance. He may not still have the weird cat weasel kind of appearance that he had in the last while. Ross should be in. I haven't seen the pieces. You don't get to see this.
Okay,
stuff.
Well,
when it goes up, because when we say, and here is Margaret, we then are running to the next location. So we didn't see, for example, the meteor. Because we missed the start of all these things. We go over to you, Mark, and then we immediately we're off.
Okay.
And so we missed it.
Well, if you're the well-informed amateur,
yeah,
perhaps Jonathan is the less informed amateur.
Yeah. Well, listen, if you imagine one of those evolutionary diagrams where it becomes ape, then hominid, then Australopithecus, then whatever, then basically Cox is evolved man. I am just slightly beyond evolved man, and Jonathan is just crawling out of the ocean.
Okay, well, I can't think of any more questions right now.
That's okay, because often the key to a good interview is brevity, and you get all you can. I feel drained. I feel there's nothing more I can give, and that means it's been a successful interview, because okay. I couldn't say another word at this stage.
Okay.
I'm likely to perform badly in the show tonight. I am so spent by this process.
Okay, well, thank you for sacrificing your time, Dara.
Quite all right.
It's been great having you.
Pleasure, lad. Yeah, it's good.